Blog Talk
I'm here.
Radio.
Football news 24/7 on Twitter, here on Blog Talk Radio, and UltimateSportsTalk.com, who covers major sports. I am your host, Erica Lynn Anderson, and we will be talking the women's gridiron scores. I'm here along with Nkishi. Unfortunately, Eric could not be with us tonight, but we will miss him, and hopefully he will be on next week. How are you, Nkishi?
I'm good. How are you doing? We missed you last week.
I'm doing good. I know. I missed you guys. It's been a crazy couple weeks, but everybody's healing up okay. And
oh, good.
So,
yay.
Yeah. Yeah. So for all our listeners out there, I was gone for a couple weeks. My youngest decided to play gymnast on a concrete floor and unfortunately got a concussion. So he had a nice little hospital stay, but so he had some lingering concussion effects. But I am happy to report that he is doing well. So
yay, that's awesome. Hey, that's what counts.
Exactly. Those boys, man, though, they'll give you a heart attack, I tell you.
I'm not gonna lie, I'm so happy I have one. And he's good because his twin is tends to be more the daredevil, believe it or not.
His twin sister is
my little daredevil.
Sometimes the girls, though, you know, you never know. My girl's not like that. My boys tend to, there's no fear, man. But I think every parent probably has one that is like that.
Yes, and you know, and you have to because the. To balance.
Yeah, right? Give you some early gray hair. So,
oh, yes, just a few.
Well, first today in the No Joke Football Huddle, we will have the amazing and talented Team USA gold medalist and DC Divas safety Callie Brownson to talk about the Divas' perfect season. And then later we're going to have Russell Baxter on to talk NFL. But first we're going to have the Women's Game Rundown. A reminder that the huddle is sponsored by Zazzle.com. Go to our shop and get some cool stuff like tees, hoodies, and gifts that you can customize. Zazzle.com/Gridiron Beauties. Every sale helps us promote another talented player internationally on our social media platforms. Remember to use the code ORDERSHIP10 and save 10% now. And we do have a contest. It ends August 31st. So send a killer on-field play pick with the hashtag NoJokeFootball to Gridiron Beauty on Twitter to enter. So definitely get on that. I do have something fun to report. Gridiron Girl, me and... if you have been listening, you know, in the past, Nicole Brown, who I do Gridiron Girl with, we are publishing a couple of books. One is a kid's book, Football 101, and then the other one is a ladies' football 101. So if you know some women in your life that just aren't all that interested in football, you'll definitely want to get them this book because at Gridiron Girl, our mission is to get every woman to love football. And we feel like the only reason women aren't interested in football is because they don't understand it. So this book is all about getting women to love the game through teaching them the game. So we will look for details on that on Gridiron Girls' Twitter page, also my Twitter page. We will definitely have the links once those are available for purchase. So
that's
really exciting.
Awesome, and I agree. That's awesome, and I agree. You know, we have to do a better job of educating women about the sport of football, and, you know, especially for the moms out there, and making sure that we give them that opportunity to learn, because, you know, I learned sitting there with my dad, you know, and that was just something that I chose to do. So kudos to you guys.
Thanks. Yeah, and I think that, you know, football, it's an intimidating sport, and then because it's really dominated by men, it's intimidating for women to, one, to ask questions because they don't want to look stupid or feel stupid, and, you know, two, it's something that there's a lot to it, you know, unfortunately, and, you know, I was fortunate that when I got married, my husband was like, you know what, if I want to watch football, I have to get my wife involved. So he literally sat down with me and showed me the game. I didn't have a dad around, you know, to watch football with. So he sat down with me, and we watched games, and he went over it, and I just fell in love with it. So I just want to bring that to every woman.
Yeah, because this is an amazing sport.
It is. It is. So
and I like
that
you have the
kids
component.
Oh, yeah, I know, because, you know, not all, obviously, I mean, there's girls that don't play, and there's even boys that don't play, but they want to watch with their dads or, you know, just whatever. So I think that, you know, having a kids version, I think it'll be fun. It's got a lot of really fun illustrations. Let me tell you, our illustrator did an amazing job. These are the most adorable pictures, so it'll be a lot of fun. So let's head over to the LFL. Heather Fur and the Chicago Blitz beat the Atlanta Steam 41-6 at Toyota Park last night. They're headed to the Legends Cup. Another big congratulations to Danica Brace, KK Matheny, Stevie Breezy, Jessica Hopkins, and Katie Findling of the Seattle Mist. They beat the LA Temptation 28-24 last night and are also headed to the Legends Cup. The Blitz will be looking for a three-peat, while the Mist will be looking for their first championship. It's going to be a great game next Sunday at the Showare Center in Kent, Washington at 3 p.m. So definitely be checking out at Backseat Coach and at Gridiron Beauty Twitter for game details. We want to say a big congratulations to the Texas Lady Jaguars, who are the 2015 Sugar and Spice Football League Super Bowl champions. They beat the Austin Angels 27-9. The San Antonio Texas Legacy won the UWF Bowl. They are on a 20-game winning streak and won 20-0. So congratulations to them. Again, you want to follow at Backseat Culture on Twitter for the latest results and the official, all of the information pertaining to the women's game. The official league websites are WFAFootball.com, IWFASports.com, and LFLUS.com. Also, visit neilrosendahl.com for awesome and informative articles. So now let's head into the No Joke Football Huddle with DC Diva Safety Callie Brownson. Hi, Callie. How are you today?
Hey, how are you guys doing?
Good.
We're good. Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
How's the weekend going?
It's great. I'm actually up in Michigan at our family lake house, kind of enjoying the wind and relaxing, finally getting some family time since spring and summer is always dedicated to just football. So it's kind of nice to unwind, and it's nice to be on this end of the season this year.
Oh, a lake house.
Cool.
So when do we get an invite?
Oh, right.
Very cool. Well, we appreciate you, you know, taking the time out of some family time to come on with us.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, we do. We really appreciate it.
I saw that, you know, obviously the DC Divas ended up with a perfect season, which is so amazing, by the way. Can you tell us what that feels like?
It's crazy. I mean, when, you know, we were all kind of talking about it, you know, right afterwards, and it did take a couple days, and I think it's still kind of setting in with everybody, you know, just thinking about all the work that went in, I mean, we've all been working together towards this one goal since really tryouts in last October is really when you kind of start zoning in on your mission and what you want. And then going into mini camp in December and then full out everything in January. I mean, when I look back on it, it all flew by really fast, but you remember all of the hard work. And I mean, it's an amazing feeling. And I think, you know, that's why everybody chases this every year, to be able to feel this feeling. And I mean, it's just, there's nothing quite like the feeling of really busting your butt and coming together as a team. And I mean, we had a big roster of people, of girls this year, and to be able to get everybody on the same page and working towards the same goal and then finally accomplishing that goal, it's almost indescribable.
Awesome. That sounds amazing. So how is the trip to LA?
It was great. You know, it was smooth sailing. So we got there. I went a few of us actually went a few days earlier so that we could kind of, you know, enjoy LA a little bit before it was business time. And, you know, went and got to hang out on the beach a little bit. And then on Thursday it was, you know, zone in, and we were on a business trip, and the whole team got there. And, you know, we just kind of locked in, had a great practice on Friday on the game field, got acquainted with the stadium, and, you know, everybody just got zoned in and focused. And, you know, when I look back on it, you know, I wasn't sure what exactly to expect. It's a lot to go from all the way from the East Coast to the West Coast and expect everybody to be zoned in and focused. Even with it being the championship game, traveling is always hard on a team to kind of stay together and tight-knit. But we did a phenomenal job. Everybody was so happy just to be together. And I'll tell you, you know, the feeling that I had going into the game was a great one. You know, like I said, sometimes traveling, you kind of have this feeling of, are we going to be focused? Are we going to be able to do everything we came out here to do? And I, without a doubt, felt very good walking onto that field on Saturday.
That's awesome. Now, was your family able to make the trip to L.A. and see a play?
My dad was. And you know, my dad in my entire career, so this was my sixth full season, I've been fortunate to never have any, knock on wood, serious injuries, to miss any chunks of season. And then including my Team USA play, my dad's only missed two of my games. So he wasn't going to miss this for the world, and I was very happy to have him with me.
That's so amazing. I know I read an article where you said that your dad has been your biggest supporter in your career. So, you know, that's awesome that he was able to see a win.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it meant as much to him as it did to me. He's very passionate, not only about the Divas, but about the sport. And he's a big contributor and supporter for that camp that we do, the Women's World Football Games. He's there and helping how he can. And so he's a big an investor in the sport and supporter as well.
That's awesome.
And Tisha, do you have some questions for Callie?
Well, no, you actually, hit on the one that I was going to talk about, was, you know, her dad being there, because that's what I remember Callie saying, you know, in my very first interview with her, was that, you know, her dad has always been one of her biggest supporters. So, you know, I think we underestimate how important that family support is when you're trying to achieve a goal or a mission, especially when what you're going for is non-traditional. And,
right,
you know,
absolutely.
you're breaking I don't want to say glass ceiling, because sometimes I hate that term, but you're breaking down gender stereotypes, and you're breaking down, you know, and you're creating new pathways. How about that? I like that better. You're creating new pathways, but you can't do it without the support. And, you know, having had the opportunity to be able to talk with Callie last week, you know, I just want to say congratulations. You know, my fellow hometown girl. So, yes, very proud. Yeah, I'm very, very proud of you. I'm very proud of what the Divas have achieved. You know, I really and truly have a huge sense of pride for what you have done and what you're bringing to the Washington, D.C. area. And I do have one question, though, in terms of, now that you guys have won, what is it that we can do here in the D.C. area to really get you guys? I mean, yes, this isn't the World Cup, but you're still hometown heroes. And I just wonder, you know, what, if anything, is going to be happening here in the D.C. area that's to celebrate this spectacular season?
So it's great that you asked that, because within the past week, and, you know, for those who are listening as well as you guys, if you go over to the D.C. Divas, whether it be the Twitter or the Facebook, DC Divas Football, there's been a series of articles and a series of, in fact, a couple girls were on Channel 9, WUSA 9's Game On last night. There's been two articles posted in the Washington Post about specific players, but also the overall thing that we've done. They did a phenomenal article on one of our linebackers, Tia, and it was not only about Tia, but it was about being a female football player and, you know, going to a day-to-day 9-to-5 and then being a female football mm-hmm. player and then achieving a championship and just how incredible, you know, of people it takes to be able to do all those things and be good at all of those things. So, you know, the big answer to that is just keep circulating those things. You know, the more we put articles like that that are so well written and just really, I mean, the people who wrote these articles took the time. The other one was on our quarterback, Allie Hamlin, who's another phenomenal individual. You know, the writers took their time in getting to know them as people and understanding really the bigger issue. It's not just, hey, look at these women who play football. It's, hey, look at what it takes. They're not getting the same opportunities as the men, but holy crap, they're working just as hard and they're achieving things and they're making this their life as well. So, you know, like I said, the best answer is to keep circulating that because everybody who has read those articles or sees those broadcasts gains a new respect. And I think that's ultimately the way that we grow this sport. It's not just saying, hey, these are just women that play football, but wow, look at what they do and how much they love it. And they're not getting a paycheck for it. They're doing it purely based off of how much they love it. And, you know, I think that that's the biggest thing that anybody can do, whether you're in the D.C. area or not, because not only, you know, are we the champions against the hometown heroes, but there's, you know, 40-something other teams around the country just in the WFA, not counting the IWFL, who are women are doing the same thing. And granted, they may not have won the championship, but they're busting their butt and juggling families and work just as much as we are. And I think that's the best way is to gain that respect in that regard.
Awesome. Well, you guys definitely have certainly earned it.
Well, thank you. Yeah, we appreciate it.
So what was the game, you know, against the Elite? Like, you know, obviously they were undefeated coming in as well. You know, I know you play safety. So were defensive adjustments, did you guys have any trouble with that, or was it pretty smooth sailing throughout the game?
Well, so I spent most of the game actually on the offensive side of the ball. And, well, I'll just say, you know, them as an overall, both sides prepping for this team, and I said it last week when I talked to you guys, and it was even more apparent when we stepped on the field with them. They are just an extremely athletic, fast team. And then I actually, a couple days after, rewatched the game through the broadcast in which it was streamed, and it rung true again. I mean, they were fast. They were fast, they were physical, and well-coached. And I was actually talking to our offensive coordinator after the game saying, you know, for them to be able to accomplish that in their first year, and granted, a lot of those girls have played together on other Dallas teams or other Texas teams, you know, they for their first year, I mean, that was a phenomenal football team that we walked on the field. And, you know, I spoke about this last week saying I was excited for this game because it was so great for the sport. And I told you, you know, I really do truly hope that it brings out as one of the best games that, you know, has happened on the women's football stage. And I really think we gate with that happen. I mean, especially there towards the end, everybody's hearts were racing a little bit. I think that we really accomplished that on both sides, on their sideline and our sideline. We brought our best product. They brought their best product. And it was a phenomenal football game. I have so much respect for that organization, not just because of their athleticism, but, you know, like I said, I played on Team USA with Odessa Jenkins, who is a co-owner, the head coach, and also a player, and I told her, I made a point after the game saying, you know, you set out creating this team to create a mold for all women's football teams to follow, and I think you really did it. A classy organization, a well-coached organization, a well-run organization, and obviously a phenomenal physical football team. So it was great for the sport. I think we really accomplished what we set out for the sport.
Awesome. And Keisha, do you have any questions anymore?
No, I'm just, you know, like I said, well, I guess, like I said, I got most of my questions in last week, so I am, you know, really just, yeah, but no, that's okay, though, because truthfully, I'm enjoying listening to Callie, you know, tell us about the experience, tell us about, you know, LA, you know, what it was like, I mean, she's literally, like, hit on everything that I would want to know in terms of, and what I think some of the listeners want to know in terms of what was playing the team, what did you get, what did you experience, you know, what were their strengths, your weaknesses. I guess one question then is, at any point in time, were you ever unsure? And I know that maybe sounds silly, but, you know, sometimes you always, it seems like the game is in a bag, but like you said, it was going to be tight all the way down to the end. At what point did it, in the game, did it ever come down to a play that could have changed the direction of the game?
Well, you know, the first thing that rings to my mind, and I think any person on the Divas or the Elite that you ask, what was that game-turning play, was an offside.
Yeah.
I don't think it was necessarily designed as an onside kick, but it almost turned out that way when they were kicking off to us. It was a short kick that took a really funny bounce. And like I said, they're a fast, athletic, physical football team. And on special teams, they were getting down the field. And, it, you know, two of them dove at the ball. And it took another weird bounce, and one of our girls, Whitney, actually jumped right in between the two players and scooped up the ball.
Oh.
Yes, and it was very that was a game-turning thing, because it would have given them the ball on our 30 going into the end zone and gave them a chance to take over and control the game. And instead, we got the ball in our hands and drove it down the field and got to eat up some more clock time. So that was a humongous play. And everybody made sure to tell Whitney that what she did was a game-changing event. And but, yes, I was back because I'm back for kicks to return, and I saw it from the opposite side of the field angle running towards it. It was the most amazing thing I've seen. And you know, big props to Whitney for being a football smart and physical football player as well and diving in there and understanding just how important, you know, securing that ball was. But, yeah, that was pretty nerve-wracking. I was pretty nerve-wracking.
Wow. I imagine it was. Wow. So can you – I'm always interested in athletes and kind of what their individual prep is like, because it's so different for everybody. So can you tell us a little bit about what your individual prep for the championship game was like?
Yeah, I touched on this a little bit last week as well. It's, you know, I have a very different one. You know, like you said, everybody seems to be a little bit different. For me, it's, you know, we spend the whole week, whether it be at practice or in film, from, you know, Monday through Thursday, just literally it's football, everything. And as much as you try to live your everyday life, you're still watching film at work or whatever, you know, preparing. My thing is, on Friday, I like to do everything but football. I like to take my mind outside of the chaos and kind of just, you know, hang out with some family, hang out with friends, and make sure that I'm kind of back to myself and you know, recharging myself, because the whole week you're kind of prepping and practicing as hard as you can and watching film and taking notes and doing all these things, that sometimes it can be a little bit straining. So I like to kind of decompress on Friday, and then, you know, I wake up on Saturday and it's right back to it, going over my notes from film and making sure that I did everything physically I could to prepare. You know, I know a lot of other people like to just be football 24/7. There's some people who, you know, I have a couple people on my team who do the same thing as I do, because it just helps us have that, you know, that anxiety level a little bit lower going into the game, being able to take some time for yourself and kind of be a normal person for at least a day. But, you know, other than that, you know, I like to incorporate my dad on the Saturday morning kind of deal too, if I have him with me, and just kind of talk over what he's seen in the past. And he's my eyes and ears, and he's not afraid to speak his mind on what could be fixed.
Yeah.
And he keeps me grounded. So, you know, I like to incorporate him on that mental prep and on a Saturday morning as well. So, you know, I like to, like I said, just kind of keep it as low key as possible, but also make sure that I'm mentally there. I know a lot of people, and kudos to them, who just, you know, go gung ho and are just ready to go and crazy. And I feel like for me, I mentally redline very fast.
Now,
awesome.
My
very
one question,
cool.
I do have another, I'm sorry, guys, I do have another question, but it's not about the DC Divas, but this one is
okay.
About Jen Welter, because I know that Callie has said she played with Jen before. Did you get a chance to watch the Cardinals in their first preseason game Saturday, or did you get a chance to watch any of it? You know what I'm saying?
I know that
you guys were playing, but I'm saying, did you get a chance to watch it afterwards?
I did. I watched the first half afterwards, and for multiple reasons. Obviously, with Jen and it being her NFL game debut, you know, everybody's like, oh, it's preseason. Doesn't matter. She was a female coach on the sidelines in an NFL game. And also, they had the female full-time referee at that game as well, which was just like,
yep.
That picture of them talking is like one of my favorite
yes.
things. probably
yes.
this year.
Yes, isn't that amazing?
It was awesome. That was, you know, that was great. So, but another reason why I would love to watch the Cardinals at any time is because I'm a huge Tyrann Mathieu fan, who's their free safety and, I mean, literally all-purpose player. So I love watching him as well. And
you're a Honey Badger
so
fan.
Yeah, I'm a huge Honey Badger fan. Huge Honey Badger
nice.
Fan. So I've been watching him since he was at LSU making unbelievable miracle plays. So I did get to watch it. I was super impressed. And I think that, you know, the more I watch them and their linebacker core, as well as, you know, how that fits in with their secondary, it just rings to me even more that she was the perfect fit to be there, because the persona of their team, their defense, is so Jen Welter, so energetic and active and aggressive and physical. And, you know, watching that game and seeing all that kind of personified, whether or not she had a humongous impact on it or not, I'd like to think she did, was great. I mean, I can't think of another NFL team that she would have been an even better fit for, because they just are exactly how she played, is the best way to put it. Watching their linebackers, watching their secondary go up and get their nose into a little bit of everything is exactly how Jen played. So I'm really happy that those two parties came together and made this happen.
Very cool.
Yeah, I saw a couple pictures of her from some of the preseason training camps, and, you know, they showed her getting in players' faces, grabbing face masks, and, you know, really, you know, working with them as a skilled position coach. And I really thought it was amazing. And I thought about everything you had said about her. So when I'm watching, I'm looking more to see, you know, her influence and impact on the player, because one of the things is, when you're a coach, you're not just there to look good on the sideline. You're actually there to teach something. And it's clear that these guys are looking to learn something from her. So listening to you talk about her style of play, having had a chance to play with her, I'm looking now to see what kind of impact and changes is she impacting on the line.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you know, like I said, with her energy and her enthusiasm, and I've read a lot of articles, you know, trying to just keep track of it, and I've seen on Twitter a lot of local Arizona sportscasters who were at training camp kind of giving their dish. Everybody across the board seems to think that her impact is positive, and that just not only means so much, you know, as somebody who knows her, but as a female football player, and, you know, I would like to coach, you know, I've coached at the high school level, you know, who knows where I go with my coaching career when I'm done, but the door that she's kicked open and the fact that she's doing such a phenomenal, it's one, like I think I touched on this last week thing, it's one thing to go through the door and say, I opened the door, I was the first female coach. And it's another thing to bust it open and do a phenomenal job so that door stays open. And that's exactly what she's doing. And it's for all of us who are players who want to be coaches. I know a lot of my Team USA teammates are now getting into that. What Jen's doing is amazing for all of us, and I'm so proud of her.
It is. It's exciting, and it's going to be even more exciting to see what happens, you know, in the future. Like you said, that door is open now, and to see what, you know, that she's, and it's hard to be a trailblazer, you know, it's not easy to be that first one, but she's giving courage and ideas to other women that can say, you know what, just because, you know, it's not done, just because it's not common, or just because someone told me no, doesn't mean I can't. So,
absolutely.
It's definitely,
absolutely.
It's going to be exciting to watch here in the future, you know, just what the ripple effect will be of what Jen has done. So,
yeah, absolutely.
All right. Well, we really appreciate you making the time and coming on with us tonight.
Thank you for having me.
And,
I said this last week. I'll say it again. You guys are phenomenal as well for the sport. You know, getting the game results out there, and obviously having you know, players and coaches on the show, you know, you never know who's listening in every week, who you might have, you know, changed their mind about something, and without you guys, that kind of stuff doesn't happen. So we're very appreciative.
Well, thank you, you guys are amazing.
Yeah,
we really
awesome
do.
You
guys are amazing.
Yeah, definitely. Well,
thank
can
you guys again.
Tell everybody where to find you on social media, and, you know, they can kind of follow your journey.
Absolutely. You know, the best way to stay in touch with what I'm up to is probably Twitter. You can get at me at CALBROWN17, CalBrown17. That's the best way probably to keep in touch with what I'm doing. And I try to keep everybody pretty in tune with what's going on with the Divas and off-season training. And, you know, that's probably the best way to keep tabs on me.
All right. Well, we look forward to, you know, talking to you again in the future and, you know, have a relaxing off-season.
I will do my best. I'll do my best.
Awesome, Sauce. Well, we're going to have to hang out one day when you guys get back, girlfriend, and you and I are going to have to go. Well, I actually don't drink beer, but we can go kick back and drink something.
Absolutely. Definitely. Let me know.
Awesome. Well, listen, enjoy your time at the Lake House. You have certainly earned it. And again, congratulations and thanks for making the D.C. area proud.
Thank you guys very much.
Have a good night, Callie.
You guys
too. Good night, Callie.
Good night.
Thanks. All right, everyone. That was the awesome Callie from the WFA champion DC Divas. She's awesome. I didn't realize that she had come on last week. I've been a little bit out of it.
No. That's okay because your questions were absolutely perfect because everything that I wanted to ask Callie and asked her last week was really in with regard to the prep. How is it feeling going into the championship, you know, to finally make it here, to be able to, you know, what's it going to be like to bring it home? So, you know, your mm-hmm. questions tonight were perfect and spot on. And so, you know, that's the beauty of you know, what we do together is because we really have a great chemistry and we play off each other. So, you know, you allow me to ask some of their questions. So, no, that was perfect. And we were so happy to have Callie last week, you know, because I hosted by myself and, you know, trying to be able to keep up with her and her energy was just, it was so infectious. So, I mean, Callie's just a great guest. So I'm happy to have her whenever she comes on.
Yeah, she's awesome. I know. I love talking to these women when they come on and hearing their unique perspectives and hearing their stories. I mean, it's just so interesting to hear and listen to everybody and you know, kind of what's going on. And you know, they're part of what makes this sport so great. So.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And that's, you know, it's been, you know, and I know Callie saying thank you to us for what we do for raising awareness, but I have to say, you know, my own level of awareness, like I said, I've always heard of the DC Divas, and I was like, oh yeah, there's a female football team in DC, and you know, I was like, yeah, their colors are burgundy and gold, but it was just something that was existing in the peripheral, you know, but now having been involved through my first season, it's just been really mm-hmm. phenomenal, and now I'm, like, paying attention, and I'm looking at things, and, you know, how they had a quarterfinal game, and it was actually held at my high school alma mater, and I'm like, oh, man, I could have gone to the game, you know, whereas before I probably never would have been interested in going, and I'm like, man, you know,
yeah.
And so I was upset that I found out the next day. I'm like, man, you know, but that's that level of awareness, and so this has just been an amazing season for me. As a radio host and as a fan of football.
Yeah, definitely. I remember that when I first started, you know, hosting on the show and just, you know, learning. I mean, I'm still learning. I mean, it's still even sometimes now learning things about the women's game and, you know, and it's wonderful to be able to get the word out about them, you know, about that women do play football and they can play football and, you know, and talking like about Jen Welter and what she's doing. And it's important for people to know, you know?
Yeah.
So.
Well, it really is. And it's so interesting. I was listening to this, local talk radio show, you know, it's just a little news update show. And one of the topics was about mass apprehension and, you know, is it genetic? Is it learned? You know, that whole thing, you know, saying how people with mass apprehension have to be able to make sure that they don't instill that fear in their children. And I will be honest, I am not a mathematician, and I actually really truly struggle with math. However, I was determined to not do that to my kids, and I actually used football to do it. you know. And it's just, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
There's just so much that we as women can do to really and truly incorporate this game into all aspects of our life, whether we're playing, coaching, watching, you know, or even integrating it into our lives. So, you know, I would use the scores and start out small just to create number awareness in my kindergartner. You know, well, what are the numbers? What are the scores? You know, what is, you know, and then, well, which team is winning? So now we're, you know, learning greater than, less than. I mean, all these little things that she's going to need later on. And as a female, I knew that my daughter was going to need those things. So I was able to take a traditional male sport and then create, as well as math, which is traditionally male, and then be able to instill this love inside of my daughter. So football is just really amazing all the way around.
Yeah, I know. And, you know, and I, obviously I've never played football, and I don't have, you know, plans to play football, but I just know being involved on, you know, the journalism side of it, if you will, writing about it and,
right,
and being as passionate as I am about it, there are still barriers even there. It's still a male,
yes,
that the audience is still dominated by males, and you know, I'll be playing the NFL, obviously all males, but, you know, we run into opposition like that with Gridiron Girl. I got a tweet once from a guy that told me, he goes, women shouldn't even be allowed to know about football. And I just remember seeing that and thinking, oh my gosh, one, the ignorance is astounding right now, but that, you know, that there's still people out there that think that, and that we run into it just with trying to write about it and, you know, and doing videos and all these things, that people think that because we're female, we don't know as much, that we cannot possibly understand the game as well as they could because they're male.
Right,
so,
and that's so
break,
true.
Break.
And like, you know, no, you're absolutely right. And like, and you're right. You know, we're, you know, on the communication side of it, and the, you know, the analyst side, we're broadcasters, we're analysts, you know, and we're not just, you know, and I hate to say this in a belittling type of way, but we're not Jessica Simpson standing up there in a pink Romo jersey. You know? I mean, I'm not, you know, and it's not a, well, it's not technically a knock, but it's just that when it comes to women and sports in general, that's the extent of what males, a lot of males and some females think that we are. We're just, oh, we like to be cute and fashionable. And yes, I do like to be cute and fashionable in my wear. I don't want to wear a man's, you know, jersey necessarily. I would like a female, you know, cut, you know, to my shirt. But, you know, because I actually want it to fit, you know. But I, but we are a growing market. And the same thing, like, my degree is actually in sports public relations. You know, I didn't just fall out of the apple cart, you know. I actually went to school to study this, to learn, because I am a former athlete, you know. I played multiple sports, and when I went to grad school, that's when I discovered the field of sports public relations, and I was like, wow, wait a minute, you mean I can get a job doing what I love? I was like, how is this possible, you know? So, and then when you're sitting down and you're talking sports, the one thing that I find a lot of guys want to do, and Erica, you know, tell me, does this happen to you? They always want me to recite a bunch of statistics and scores and facts. And I'm like, really? So this is,
I have to
take a test every time I want to join the conversation.
Right.
Do you ever find that sometimes?
I do. Or if I don't know, you know, a member of the, you know, 1970 Steelers who won the Super Bowl. You know, I know the Steelers were big in the 70s, but if I don't know the name of the linebacker that got the blah, 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 all of a sudden I'm not Clyde to talk or watch football. And that's not okay, because they don't do that. Males don't do that to each other, but they, for some reason, feel like they have to approve us, you know, and it is. It's very frustrating. And, you know, I have seen, unfortunately, sometimes women are the biggest detriment to each other. I know you probably see this, but sometimes we women think it's a competition.
And instead of lifting each other up and instead of encouraging each other, we tend to put each other down because I want to be the best. But really all that does is hurt our cause. All that does is keep us in the past. You know, I had an interaction with a woman on Twitter that, you know, Gridiron Girl has things that have to do with fashion and recipes and tailgating, because there are some women that are interested in that stuff, but that doesn't mean that she's any less knowledgeable about the game. She just likes different things, and that's okay. But a woman on Twitter was like, oh, that means that they're not a legit football site. And I just was taken aback thinking, you're putting women down. This is, we're here because we're trying to further the cause. We're trying to, you know, so that, you know, sometimes women are even the biggest detriment to each other, I find. But
and there's those women, I and that's those, is wrestling?
Nope, not yet.
Oh, okay. Well, no, and you're absolutely right in that as well, because, you know, there's this side, and I don't know what to call it. It's, you know, it's the pantsuit side of business. You know, it's almost like female execs who think that they have to wear pantsuits all the time, you know. And don't get me wrong, I actually prefer pantsuits just because I walk back in pants. But the point I'm making is that there's this theory that in order to be taken seriously, we have to be hard-nosed. We have to be hard-lined. Everything has to be serious. You know, we can't have the fun side. And, you know, that's one of the things that I really loved about when I first started running, was that, yes, I actually know sports, but, you know, there's another side of it. There's the whole, we like to look at cute men. And guess what? That's okay. You know, that's okay. It doesn't make any less of a sports fan or sports knowledgeable. You know, I'm single. So one of the things guys always say to me, oh, what's your favorite thing? You know, when people try to hook me up, what's your favorite place to go on a date? I said, well, in the summertime, take me to a baseball game. And people, you know, and I get like the crap, and I'm like, look, I like baseball. Now, I won't watch it on TV, not unless it's like the playoffs. You know, we're getting close to the World Series. But take me to a live game. Oh, all the day. Take me to a live game. I'm so excited because I'm actually getting ready to take the little people to their first football game. We're going to a preseason game. You know, and everybody's like, well, that's not a real game. I said, look, they're 10. It's a real game.
Exactly.
It's a real thing to get for me because, you know, I don't like all of the sometimes still going at the games, and I just would rather not expose them to that. So I don't have to worry about any of that during preseason because there's less chance of it. So this is about the family time and about spending the time. But, yeah, you're absolutely right. We do know the game. We know the sport. We sit down. We study film. We study the plays.
Yep.
We study what's happening. And we keep up with what's happening in the news. And we, you know, thoughts and opinions. I listen to multiple broadcasters. You know, I literally have 4 different sports talk radio channels programmed on my car radio because I want to, one, keep up with what's happening in all sports, but two, I like getting different opinions about, you know, happening in the world of sports. And then listening to those different opinions and researching allows me to formulate my own. And what are my thoughts?
Exactly.
You know, so I love it.
Yeah, I know you know, how it applies to women in sports and in general, you would think we were past this, but we are not yet. But we are definitely making headway. I think the women's game, obviously, they're showing what they're showing the world and what, you know, I think we're breaking the stereotypes and we are breaking down barriers, you know, one by one. I saw something interesting on Twitter, and let me tell you, people, you will be so dang proud of me that I did not start a rant or a fight on Twitter.
Uh-oh.
You guys should, I deserve like a round of applause or something. So I'm on Twitter.
Okay, hold on.
And some
we don't have a soundboard yet, but here we go.
I can. So somebody was doing their fantasy football draft, which personally I think it's still a little early for,
you know, fantasy football just because injuries can happen still yet in preseason. But that's
and
besides the point.
They've already happened with the Redskins.
Yeah, exactly. You just and Brandon Browner had a scary incident, even though they say it's not serious. But some guy was saying, "Oh, I'm going to sit in on my girlfriend's all female fantasy football league draft," and he goes, "It's going to be hilarious." And I was like, that sounds derogatory. So I clicked on the thread, and guys are commenting. And they're going, oh, I bet the first pick is the best-looking guy. And they're like, I bet it's Eric Decker. And they're like, all these guys are making these comments that this all-female fantasy football league draft, all the women, basically, they didn't do their research, and they were just going to draft guys based on their looks. That's what the whole thread. I didn't comment, like I said. But
wow,
you
deserve a serious round of applause.
Right? I was like, how dang insult is that? Like, again, because we're female, we're not capable of playing fantasy football to the point where we actually know positionally who to put on our bench, who to start each week. I mean, what? At what point? Oh, just made me so mad.
Right. Well, so if that's the case, why do we have such if men are so much better at it, then why do we have such awesome guests as the Fantasy Greek who are telling everybody and giving everybody advice about who to pick?
Yeah.
You know, this, we all need help because that's why we have fantasy experts, you know?
Exactly.
That's just, gosh, that's so crazy.
I have my best friend, Stacy, she has been the champion in her fantasy football league 3 years running. She has beat all the guys 3 years running. So Stacy is awesome at fantasy football. And Russell just came on, so
yay!
Next to the No Joke Football, we have Russell Baxter to talk NFL. Hey, Russell,
hey,
how
Russell.
Are you?
Good evening. How are we doing today?
Pretty good. How are you?
Good evening, Mr. Baxter. How are you doing?
I'm doing just terrific. Getting caught up on my preseason action on the NFL Network and working on my latest piece for Bleacher Report. So all is good. Watching and writing football, what's better than that?
There's nothing better than that.
And talking to us.
Yeah.
No, talking to you and you talking to us. That's what's better.
Well, I wish everybody felt that way, but I'll take it, so.
Yeah, I saw the Minnesota replay. The Minnesota-Tampa Bay game was on before I came to do the show. So I did see there was about 8 minutes left when I came down to do the show. But,
I
did see that replay.
Yeah, I can't wait for your comment.
Mine?
Yes, yours.
Hey, I'm not, no rant. Maybe tonight. So
maybe, okay.
Maybe, possibly. Russell, I am curious, what team, just obviously I know it's very early, so it's hard to make predictions, but based on the draft and, you know, free agency moves, things like that, what team do you anticipate being the most improved this season from last season?
Well, I kind of have my eye on the Minnesota Vikings. It's not so much, you know, I know a lot of people think it's Adrian Peterson, but it's a combination of things. And I think the thing that stands out the most is the head coach, and that's Mike Zimmer, who I think is a very good football coach. His track record speaks for itself as an assistant. I thought last year he did a terrific job. They just have to learn to beat the teams in their own division. They were, you know, 1-5, but a 7-9 team. So they did okay against the teams outside the division, but they just got to do a little better within the division. And, you know, obviously that means being competitive with the Green Bay Packers, which they were in one game and they certainly weren't in the other. But being competitive in the division in general, I think they could push for a playoff appearance this year. I don't think they're a threat to Green Bay in the NFC North, but I see them taking a little bit of a jump. Maybe the Bears taking, you know, a little bit of a jump as well, and maybe the Lions slide and get down a little bit.
Okay. You know, I did watch, you know, last night when the Vikings-Tampa Bay came on, and I was impressed with how, you know, even though, you know, AP wasn't playing, he didn't start, but how Bridgewater was connecting with Rudolph and how he was connecting with some of those receivers
I was thinking that, you know, the Vikings, they just obviously, even for preseason, they looked pretty good. They did look pretty good, and they got some good pressure on Tampa Bay and, you know, defensively. And so I definitely agree with you there.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Teddy Bridgewater had a pretty good rapport with Jarius Wright last year. They bring in Mike Wallace, who should be able to stretch the field for them. Former Pro Bowl receiver, bit of a disappointment in his 2 years with the Miami Dolphins, but still a very talented guy. I'll be curious to see what happens at right tackle. Phil Loholt, who's been one of their steadier players on the right side, suffered an Achilles injury last night. And anytime you hear that, you know that's not good. So it'll be interesting to see. I know they drafted some offensive linemen. I think the kid from Pitt, T.J. Cummings, I believe is his name. Third or fourth round draft choice. He could be a guy who fills in there. But that would be a big loss if they lost Loholt. But, you know, a lot of people excited about, you know, Adrian Peterson returning. And it should be a very, very well-rested Adrian Peterson. And I say that because not only last year where he missed, you know, basically the entire season except for one game, but the year before that, he only played 14 games. So he goes from 348 carries in 2012 to 300 carries total the last two seasons. And that's the most important thing for a running back. Don't buy into that, oh, he just turned 30 years old, so he's on the downside of his career. I mean, yeah. You know, that to me is one of the most overrated stats I've ever heard because it has nothing to do with – listen, you could be a 28-year-old running back and on the downside of your career if you're running the ball 300 times a year.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
go ahead, Erica.
Let's go ahead. Oh, I was going to say, age, as a Patriots fan, how often every single year I got to hear, well, Tom Brady turned blah, 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 he's on the downside of his career, and then every year, what does Brady do? So that whole age thing is, like you said, it's definitely a very tired and overused definition of a player.
Well, it's probably a stat attached more with a running back than any other position. But you know, I don't know why that is. I've you know, turned 30 years old, and all of a sudden they're, you know, it's imagine. So what would happen? Let's do a scenario. Let's say Adrian Peterson's playing on a Monday night, and the game goes into overtime, and he happens to be playing on his 29th birthday, but he turns 30 at midnight. Does his legs get out from under him because he's a 30-year-old running back? does he turn into a pumpkin? You know, all you have to do is look at somebody like Tiki Barber, who had his two best years, his last 2 years in the league. Why? Because he spent the majority of his career returning punts and being a pass catcher.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, and I think the other part of it is that when you have the issue with the running back, I think it's also about the wear and tear on the knees, but that's also then how are you using them? Do you have enough running backs and do you have enough of a balanced offense that you're not making one person carry the load for the team? And when you have a situation like Minnesota has had, where Adrian Peterson pretty much was the offense because they don't have a quarterback, then yes, you're impacting the ability and longevity of the player. But when you have a perfect trifecta on the offense with a quarterback, a effective wide receiver, and or a tight end, depending on how the combination, you know, the tight end is used, and a running back, then you're getting to balance the wear and tear on the tire, so to speak, and you're going to be able to get more out of them. But if you just have a ground and pound style, then yeah, you're going to wear that individual out. So I think it's not just the position, but it's how the players are utilized in the scheme that the coaches are running.
Well, yes and no. You know, as you know, running backs a lot of times get stronger as the game goes on. You know, that's why some backs want to carry the ball 25, 30 times. You know, because the defense starts to get a little worn down. And, you know, now that there's a rhythm with the offensive line, and by the way, let's not forget the offensive line, which is a big part of this as well. You know, in the case of Adrian Peterson, he's also an attack-type runner. This is not a guy who sits back and you know, takes a lot of shots. He administers a lot of shots. So, you know, with the fresher legs, you know, with a line that I think is more than respectable, and we'll see what happens with Loadholt. He's always been a guy who's been pretty regarded as good run blocker and so on. We'll see what happens, but it is about balance. You know, you don't want one person carrying your whole load. And by the way, that also goes for your quarterback. You know, I know this is this supposedly quarterback-driven league, but you look at statistically some of the greatest seasons in NFL history in terms of quarterbacks, and you know, the bigger the numbers, the more the Super Bowl failures. If you even get to the Super Bowl at all. Remember that only one time in the history of this, well, I'll say the Super Bowl era, okay? There's only one time in the Super Bowl era that a quarterback's thrown at least 40 touchdown passes and his team won the Super Bowl the same year. We didn't see Peyton Manning do it with his 55. We didn't see Brady do it with his 50. The only guy to do it was Kurt Warner when he threw the 41 with the Rams in 1999. He's the only guy. So, you know, this is a game that's still made up of a lot of balance, including the defense, and it's not a one-man show. I mean, if it was handball or bowling, we'd be in good shape here, even tennis. But, you know, everybody's got to be on the same page.
Definitely. So, what did you think? Obviously, the Chargers just signed Philip Rivers to an extension through the 19 season. Worth $83.25 million, 65 is guaranteed. What are your thoughts on that?
I wish it was me.
Amen.
Right?
What are my thoughts on that? I wish it was me. Listen, you know, that draft class of 2004, which was Eli Manning, Ben Roethlisberger, and Philip Rivers, not necessarily in that order. These guys have climbed their way up among statistically some of the great quarterbacks of all time. And in the case, obviously, Eli Manning and Ben Roethlisberger, the two of them have made a combined 5 Super Bowl appearances as well, help leading their teams to the Super Bowl, the 2 Super Bowl titles. Eli happened to be the MVP in both of the Giants' wins. Ben Roethlisberger, of course, had the memorable drive in San Antonio Holmes against the Cardinals. Didn't play so good in Super Bowl 40. They somehow won the game. Philip Rivers has not had the Super Bowl appearance yet. He's had playoff appearances. He's had AFC Championship game appearances, but there's no denying his impact. So, you know, that's about right, in this day and age. And as you know, with quarterback, inevitably, if the Chargers get in any kind of salary cap issue, guess who's the first person who's going to have to redo his deal?
Right.
Thank you very much. You win.
Right. Well, so what team other than the Vikings has stood out to you? So, let me backtrack because I want to ask a different question. What team so far in these preseason games do you think is off to a really shaky start? And I don't want to go with the obvious Erica's Patriots because we don't know what the Garofalo Brady situation is going to be, and I would like Erica to stay calm. I want you to stay calm. But so far, what team do you think might be in trouble just on what you've seen so far in these few preseason games? Because I have an idea of a team.
Except Pittsburgh and Minnesota, every team's only played one preseason game. So Pittsburgh and Minnesota played 2 because of the Hall of Fame game. Yeah, I don't go much into what I see on preseason. I do with the rookies just the off season in general. But, I mean, it's hard to believe that it's going to be a good year for the San Francisco 49ers based on all the defections. Change at head coach. You know, the one saving grace for them is the fact that Trent Baalke, the guy really on the spot, I would say, is not so much Jim Tomsula, it might be the general manager, Trent Baalke. Obviously, his issues with Jim Harbaugh were pretty well known. Now that Niners did promote within, Jim Tomsula was the defensive line coach, now the head coach. Jeep Christ was the quarterback's coach. He's now the offensive coordinator. Eric Mangini was actually the tight ends coach last year and is now the new defensive coordinator. But, I mean, who's not in San Francisco? About the, let's put it this way. Nobody left their heart in San Francisco.
No.
Okay? They have had more defections and retirements. And now, you know, obviously we see the Alden Smith situation. The Niners, for the most part, could kind of hang their hat on defense last year. But now, no Chris Borland, no Patrick Willis, no Alden Smith, no Justin Smith, no Parrish Cox, no Chris Culliver. You know, Navarro Bowman, we're still kind of waiting to see how he's going to do. They still have Ahmad Brooks. They still have Glenn Dorsey, who didn't play last year. It could be a really rough year, and that's a really rough division to begin with.
Yeah. I definitely agree. I actually am the teams, you know, that are on my watch list, and it's actually not even from my own personal biases, but I'm watching the Eagles. I'm watching the Redskins. I mean, they've lost now Paulson for the year already. And there was another player, and his name just went out of my head, but the Skins have already lost two players for the season already. So, and then with the whole RG3 thing. So, for me, the teams that I'm looking at this year are Skins and the Eagles. Ironically, I'm actually looking at the Oakland Raiders, you know, in terms of teams that I want to keep my eye on. And I'm going back with you with San Diego and the Chargers, because for some reason I just really think that Phillip Rivers is set to have a breakout year. I mean, like you said, he's already been knocking on the door, you know, several times, and he's coming from that amazing draft class. So I'm really looking to see him have a breakout season. And I'm actually less interested in the Broncos. I'm less interested in the Patriots, because I think that those stories are always in the headlines so much. But I'm actually looking, and I'm actually not looking at Tennessee, and I'm not looking at the Buccaneers. I know everybody's paying attention to Jameis Winston and Mariota, but those stories even to me are less interesting. I'm looking at, you know, those are the ones I'm looking at. Chip Kelly, is he really this genius that everyone says he is, and what kind of moves is he making? Oh, and the Bills. I don't know. Call me crazy. I know Eric is going to go on a rant, but I actually really, really, really am interested in seeing what the Bills are going to do this year, because I really do like their head coach.
Well, I think you didn't
What's
leave
that?
Anybody out, so
I did not mention that team. I did not mention that team because I'm not paying attention. I need to leave my heart, you know, and just leave it in Texas right now.
Well, I'm a little on you with San Diego as well, and I think it's about San Diego, but it's also about my concerns about the Denver Broncos. And as I was just writing, when was the last time Peyton Manning was the quarterback of a team where you probably thought a little more or felt better about the defense than the offense? I'm very concerned about Denver's offense, and it has to do with the five men up front. A lot of changes on that offensive line, trying to protect the 39-year-old quarterback. I'll be real curious. You know, Ryan Clady's out for the year with a torn ACL. Orlando Franklin went to San Diego via free agency. Will Montgomery, who played a little center for them last year, in Chicago, they took Manny Ramirez, you know, not the baseball player, but the offensive lineman, and traded him to Detroit. I think defensively they could be very fierce with Wade Phillips. And Von Miller gave us a glimpse that he looked real healthy against the Seattle Seahawks in the preseason, early in the game. But offensively, I think there's something to worry about when it comes to the Denver Broncos. I wouldn't be surprised if San Diego gave him a real, real hard push this year.
Yeah.
No, me neither.
So what you know, we were talking about salary cap with the Chargers. You know, eventually if Phillip Rivers, you know, contract makes a difference there. Do you have any concerns with the Seahawks salary cap? You know, between Sherman's deal and Wilson's deal, you know, and the Seahawks seem like they have been pretty free
and liberal with their money the last couple of seasons. Do you think that that's going to come back to bite them in the next couple seasons or so?
Not necessarily. I mean, you know, listen, they're going to have to cut some players, and that's the reality situation. You know, but for, they've also managed to have a very good run the last few years because a lot of their most successful players have not been first-round draft choices. So, you know, you don't pay first-round picks like you used to. I understand that. But the fact that, you know, you can have a Richard Sherman or a Cam Chancellor or a Russell Wilson who are not former first-round picks and you can buy a little time. Now Russell Wilson's getting paid. Now Bobby Wagner's getting paid. Sherman, Earl Thomas was a first-round draft choice. You know, he's getting paid. Cam Chancellor wants his money. So this is where you kind of keep an eye on things and so on. But, you know, the Seattle Seahawks are going to try and do something that hasn't been done since the 90s when Buffalo went to four straight Super Bowls. They're going to try to go to a third straight Super Bowl. But they're also going to try to do something that hasn't been done in more than 40 years. And that is win the Super Bowl the year after you lose the Super Bowl. The last team to do that was the 1972 Miami Dolphins.
Oh, wow.
Okay.
Was that a drop the mic stat? Should I go now?
You know, that's what I love about you is your sports stats. because you know, you're my go-to guy. You know, Eric and I were just talking about how one of the things about being a female in the sports industry is we're often, you know, people are always looking for stats. So trust and believe, you drop all the stats and knowledge you need to.
I do my best, my dear.
Go ahead, Nkeshi.
Well, no, because Erica, you stay over there with the football, because I want to ask Russell some other questions that are still football related, but less on the stat side, but just more on his analytical thought processing side about the game and the NFL. So go ahead and ask your question, and I'll ask my question next.
Oh, no, it's just, you know, we all saw the Geno Smith situation. And then the Bills promptly sign, his name is insane, so I've promptly dubbed him Jawbreaker. So the Bills sign him and Geno Smith's out 6 to 10 weeks. What is your thoughts on that entire situation with the Jets and the Bills? And obviously the Jets now have to go with Ryan Fitzpatrick, who has never really been much of a breakout quarterback, if you will. So what are your thoughts?
Well, it's obviously very unfortunate. It was a new start for Geno Smith and a lot of the Jets. You got Brandon Marshall in the process. You know, he's had his turnover problems. Ryan Fitzpatrick does as well. I think the thing that bothered me is, the timing of Rex Ryan. And a lot of people are, you know, jumping all over Rex Ryan. You know, it was slap at Geno Smith. I didn't take it that way at all. Rex Ryan coached this kid who hit Geno Smith last year, okay? He also coached Percy Harvin. Was that a slap at the Jets as well? I mean, he signed Percy Harvin. So, you know, that all around the league, if a coach leaves, more than likely he's going to bring in his guys. So, you know, I think it was less about that. I think, and it was funny because, you know, we're just so fickle. You know, if this was Tom Brady or Peyton Manning or Ben Roethlisberger or Drew Brees or quarterback, quote-unquote, we liked or we thought was good, you know, we would not be as disrespectful as some of the people I heard saying stuff like, well, you know, this kid did the Jets a favor. I mean, are you kidding me? I mean, is that what we come down to in our profession? You know, are you kidding me? You know, why somebody hit you in the jaw and have somebody else write for you? Okay? Now we have a better writer. I mean, come on. I mean, I just thought that was way out of line and way overplayed and so on. So, listen, the Jets' offense was going to be a little bit of a work in progress, but they have a lot of running backs. They have what looks like a better receiving core. Geno's problem is holding on to the football. 41 turnovers in 2 years. You know, that's obviously not good. But it was also Mark Sanchez's problem as well. So this is a different start in a new era, but now, of course, we're going to have to wait and see what happens with him and so on. But, listen, the AFC East is kind of quite the look to it this year. I think every team improved except for New England. And New England doesn't have that much improving to do, but I will say this, I'm less concerned about Tom Brady, Jimmy Garoppolo, and more concerned with New England's defense, which was really the unit that took a lot of free agent blows this offseason.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, between our, you know, losing corners and Will Fork and, you know, our defense definitely took some hits. But, it's also kind of Belichick's baby, if you will. It's, you know, I tend to trust what he's doing. He hasn't really proved that he doesn't know what he's doing. But, the defense is
Oh, absolutely.
Is
listen, anybody would be a fool to sit here and downplay the New England Patriots. I mean, listen, they've been in the playoffs. They've been in the playoffs every year since 2009. They missed in 2008, going 11-5. They've had, 14 straight winning seasons under Bill Belichick, 12 straight seasons of 10 or more wins. Listen, we went through this last year, 2-2, got humbled at Kansas City. Everybody was talking about Brady being done. Let's bring in Garoppolo. The defense is terrible. The offensive line is a mess. Everybody, a lot of people counted them out. And I've never seen a team get mathematically eliminated in 4 weeks and still win the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Well, so, Russ, you hit on something that I agree with, is that I'm really tired of people downing Rex Ryan for picking up Emin Kapali. Because of exactly what you said. He coached this kid last year. You know, he brought him in. He coached him. He's been with the team. He knows what the kid's strengths and weaknesses are. And it's not like Rex Ryan is going to learn some fabulous jet secrets that he didn't know before, because that was his team last year. So it's not like this is insider trading. This is someone I've worked with. This is someone I think I can continue to work with. And I'm going
to
bring him in. That's one of the reasons why I'm...
It's much ado about nothing, honestly.
Absolutely. Well, I am interested in the Eagles for that reason, though.
If Buffalo is as deep as everybody thinks they are on defense, the kid's going to have a tough time making the team.
And Rex has always shined. Rex has always shined in terms of what his defenses have been able to put on the field.
And the thing is, not like, I get that the kid punched Geno Smith and broke his jaw. Honestly, people were fighting all over the place in training camp and things like that. It just turns out that this punch happened to break Geno Smith's jaw. You know, it's kind of an unlucky thing that happened. It's not, people welcomed, Michael Vick with open arms back into the NFL, and this kid punches Geno Smith in the jaw, and all of a sudden he should never have a career in football again. That part is completely ridiculous. It was a fight.
The bottom line is, this is a business. And also the bottom line is that the league will look into what he did, and chances are he could be, fined or suspended early in the year, too.
Right. Yeah. It's not like just because he picked him up that he's going to, be playing tomorrow. But, Erica, you were right about the whole training camp thing. I mean, look at the melee that happened down here in Richmond, the Skins and the Houston Texans. I mean, we're those two teams lucky that a valuable player didn't get hurt, in that all-out brawl between both teams as opposed to two players. Both teams could have seriously lost players, in that incident. So you're absolutely right. But I would like to get your insight, Russ, on two things, the Eagles and their quarterback coaching situation, because that is interesting to me. For someone with your knowledge of stats and statistics, I'm still scratching my head at the Sam Bradford-Nick Foles trade. That literally just has me scratching my head, And
then
you've got, yes, absolutely. And then you've got Mark Sanchez, and now you've got Tim Tebow. And I'm like, is this the Jets part two? I mean, that is why I'm really curious. It would be one thing, the Sam Bradford just by itself has me in the perplexed zone. But now you brought in two players who both played under each other in the same position on another team, and ironically almost identical team colors too. So that's the first situation I would love for you to address. And the second one that I would love to get your thoughts on is the whole Michael Sam situation where he's I don't even know what he's done, if he's retired or if he's just quit the Alouettes or if he's just – I mean, clearly he's done with football. I mean, I don't think he's coming back to the NFL. But I'd love to get your take on the whole Michael Sam situation. So would you start with the Eagles for me and then Michael Sam?
Sure. You know, I think they're just being very precautionary with Sam Bradford. He missed the last 25 games that he played with the Rams. I was a little perplexed by the trade as well. I think it's a great move for the Rams, and you know, but it's also for the Rams, and we keep on hearing for years this is a quarterback away from getting back in the playoffs, which they haven't been since 2004. Nick Foles is a former Pro Bowl quarterback, had his own turnover problems last year.
Right.
And, you know, the Eagles led the league in turnovers last year. You know, everybody blames Sanchez. You know, the two quarter between Foles is 13 and Sanchez is 14. They had 27 of the 36. You know, I think this is, you know, Mark Sanchez is somebody that Chip Kelly was familiar with. Matt Barkley is somebody he's familiar with because of where they played. You know, a pair of, you know, Pac-10 quarterbacks and so on. I've always believed that the reason they signed Tim Tebow was to throw Matt Barkley out there and maybe try to get a draft pick for him. I still think they might try to trade him by the time it's all said and done. And, you know, not looking at Tim Tebow to be anything but the third-string quarterback. I don't think Tim Tebow's, you know, in a position to, you know, challenge even for the backup job. But, you know, when you have – listen, you had four quarterbacks on their roster, and only one of them started a game last year. You know, Matt Barkley, you know, saw a little action. Tebow hasn't played a game since 2012. So I'm a little perplexed still what they're doing. I'll be curious to see if Sam Bradford plays against the Ravens this week. As far as Michael Sam, you know, I don't know what I can really say about that. I mean, this is his decision and his life, and, you know, maybe he doesn't have the desire to play football anymore. Maybe he has too many other things going on in his life, and he wants to dedicate stuff that he feels is more important. But, I mean, you know, he gave it a go in the NFL. He gave it a go in the CFL. It's, you know, he's making the decision to walk away. So I don't think it's anything more than, you know, like a life decision as far as, like, he wants to go on with a new phase of his life.
I think there's something to be said for leaving something on your terms and not being forced
Absolutely.
Out, or, you know, I can respect any player who makes the decision to leave on their terms and to do something that they with their life that they feel is a better fit, or, you know, who knows what could be happening personally, but I definitely respect anybody that makes that particular decision.
I do too.
Absolutely.
And I think we
should all have that right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Well, and that was
what I was hoping you would say.
That's what I was hoping you would say, was the fact, because I think there's a lot of talk about, oh, he couldn't cut it again, as opposed to this is someone who's making a life decision. And that was kind of where my thoughts were, but I wanted to get your opinion on the situation.
Well, keep something in mind. For the people who say he can't cut it, where does that put them?
Right.
Yeah.
Did they even try?
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, did they even try? You know, did he even have the opportunity to try, the desire to try? You know? So, I mean, we're a world full of critics out there. There was something for me has become very popular in this day and age of overreaction. And what I always refer to is obviously knee-jerk reaction. When I read a lot of knee-jerk reaction, I always keep one very important thing in mind. The word jerk is attached.
Very good point, Russell. So we have been bombarding you with questions, but we are almost done here, so I kind of wanted to open the floor for you. And if there's something that you want to get out there, anything you want to discuss or whatever, you have the mic.
Well, I mean, listen, follow me on Twitter, Backs Football Guru. I'm, you know, shooting for, you know, a little milestones I have to do with followers and so on just to get, you know, people interested in football as much as I do. You know, I've got this little campaign about getting 40,000 for Super Bowl 50, and maybe we'll shoot for 50,000 for Super Bowl 50. But, you know, busy on Bleacher Report, busy on NFL Spin Zone, loving what I do. And, you know, you follow me on Twitter. I have a Facebook page called Pro Football Guru. The website's kind of in transition right now. There might be some big things happening with that in the next couple of months. But we're 25 days away from the regular season starting. So I don't know what 25 means to you. Is that LeSean McCoy or Fred Biletnikoff?
LeSean McCoy or who, did you say?
Fred Biletnikoff.
Hall of
Fame wide receiver for the Raiders.
Yes,
MVP
I know.
MVP of Super Bowl 11.
I'm going for Shady. You're not old. I'm going.
No,
I'm
older.
I'm going for Shady. Okay.
OLD-ER.
I'm definitely going for Shady. Okay.
Is this my one time where I can finally now? I think I'm ready to ask my question. What are your thoughts about my team and the fact that they picked up Darren McFadden for their running back?
How do you mean picked him up? Like off the ground?
Sometimes that's how I feel. I mean, here's the thing. I mean,
listen,
Darren McFadden has so much talent. He has talent. I cannot knock his talent. But,
I can't knock
you
his
know,
talent either.
He's just been
unable to stay healthy.
Injured. He's just been so injured. And that's the thing, is that is he, you know, and because we let go of DeMarco Murray and we didn't, you know, we couldn't come to the contract negotiations with him. And I'm just like, that's fine if you're going to let him, you know. But then I just felt that they're, I don't know. I just don't know what I see for him. I don't want him to go back. Like we were saying about being balanced and quarterbacks that are throwing so much, that has always been one of Romo's biggest problems, that he throws and he's, you know, because it's such a pass-happy league, but he throws so much that we don't have the balanced attack. So what are your thoughts on the offensive, you know?
People have said that anybody can run behind that offensive line. We're about to find out that it's true. I don't think they gave DeMarco Murray enough credit for the job he did last year. The line was fantastic. But, I mean, the Cowboys were in a very odd position, too. You know, do they pay the guy who led the NFL in rushing, or do they franchise the guy who led the NFL in touchdown receptions? There's no mistake that Tony Romo had a big year last year. That had a lot to do with Dez Bryant as well, and DeMarco Murray as well. And, you know, so this wasn't a well-balanced team. Defensively, they still have some holes, but their best friend last year was the running game. They kept their defense off the field for a long, long periods of time, and they were persistent with it. So it's going to be interesting what they see with Darren McFadden and Joseph Randall and Lance Dunbar. And fortunately for McFadden, you know, so odd. Last year was McFadden's seventh year in the league, and he actually played all 16 games for the first time in his career. And irony of ironies, the Oakland Raiders finished dead last in the league in rushing yards. So I don't know what that means, but Darren just got back to the field yesterday, I believe, after, you know, being on PUP and having the hamstring, I think both hamstring problems. He's a bit of an enigma. You know, it's not like he has a lot of wear and tear on him because he hasn't had, you know, when he can be spectacular, but there's just so many lapses. And, you know, it'd be interesting to see if Dallas still brings in one more running back. Some people thought they might draft one. They wound up not doing that. I think they were confident in their system, but they were in an odd position as far as, you know, two guys who had years like they had, you know, being eligible for free agency in the same year.
Yeah, that's true. So we'll just wait and see.
What was that? What did you say, Kishi?
I said, yeah, we'll just wait and see.
We're all going to wait and see, so.
Exactly. Well, Russell, we really appreciate you coming on and answering our questions and imparting your wisdom to us. Really appreciate you making the time.
No problem.
And hopefully you'll be back again throughout the season.
We shall see. Yeah, we're gonna be hopping this year, but I'm sure we'll talk again soon.
Yes, now everybody go follow @BaxFootballGuru to keep up with Russell and his football musings, and you can get access to his articles on his Twitter page. So thanks again, Russell. We really appreciate it, and we had a lot of fun.
All right.
Thanks for coming on, Russ.
You got it.
All right, thanks. Have a good night.
Good night.
All right, everybody. That was Russell Baxter, the football guru. And that about does it. Our show did run long today. We have the two guests. So we really appreciate you sticking with us and tuning in. We want to also thank you for sharing our hashtags on Instagram and Twitter. We appreciate it. Make sure to share our podcast weekly on social media. You can find us on Twitter @GridironBeauty. You can find me on Twitter @PassFangirl12. You can find the site that I write for @GridironGirl.org. You also want to check out GridironGirl.org. With the start of the season, we're going to be having new, fresh content up, so you definitely will want to check it out. You can follow Inkishi on Twitter @KishiCuties. And you can find Eric on Twitter @FitForLife, life spelled with a Y. And remember to go to our shop to get cool stuff, Zazzle.com/GridironBeauties. And remember, the contest ends August 31st. Tweet a pic of playing on the field @GridironBeauty with the hashtag NoJokeFootball. So for me and Inkishi, thank you again for listening in. We want to thank Callie and Russell for making the time and coming on. And everybody have a great evening.
Good night.
See you later.